we covered last Torah portion.
Father-in-law.
Mm-hmm. So we met Yitro again, right? Yes, correct.
It's my birthday.
He kissed him when he came.
Correct. Yep. So they embraced and they kissed each other just like Aaron and Moses had did before he went to Egypt. Yes.
Yeah. I was going to mention that. And yeah, who's Amanda? What is the name of it?
Oh, the name. So the bread that came down from heaven, they called it, what is it in Hebrew, which was manhu, which they then called man, in Hebrew. And it's the Latin that gives us manna. We get that from the Latin. It all means the same. It just means, what is it in English, right?
Moses' wife and her two sons came with him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Moses' wife, and you guys remember the names of her two sons? Of his two sons?
Gershon.
Gershom and?
I don't remember his name.
I think he's only mentioned like once in the Bible, his name.
Whose was it?
Moses's, yeah.
Gershom.
And the other son?
Oh. John. This is your question. This is your question.
You feel the bus coming at you pretty quick there, John?
Yep.
I'm under the bus. Me.
So, starts with the E. Same as Abraham's servant.
Elizer.
There you go.
Good job.
And the eyes are. Yep. God is my help, right? So, yep, they came. And the last time we had saw them was right before he went to Egypt, and then we see him right when he comes out of Egypt. Same thing with Jethro, right? So there's this pattern of before and after that happens with him. Anything else stick out to you guys from last Torah portion? Yes?
The commandments.
Oh, the commandments. Those are pretty important, right? So that's what we're going to write today. Good job, Miss Viola. You just struck a cool thing in my mind. So
I did it.
So when are they given the commandments?
This was
before or after redemption?
After.
They're given after. So we can be safe to say that the commandments or the Torah is for redeemed people. Oh, redeemed. Is it two E's at the end? Goodness.
Nope.
Trying to blank. One.
Just a D. You're just short of D.
Thank you. Redeemed people.
Told you he needs a vanna.
The Torah is for redeemed people. You catch that? It wasn't given to them when they were in Egypt. It's given to them after their redemption. So you get redeemed, and then here's the Torah, the covenant, which is supposed to change your identity. Right? So, that was a good point you made.
It was in the Torah.
Yeah. The commandments, they're given to them after they come out of Egypt, not before, right? So nowhere ever in your Bible does it say that these guys, or that God said they have to keep the law in order to be saved. Whoever teaches that is incorrect. Incorrect. They keep the law because they were saved. They keep the law because they were redeemed. Right? So this is going to be very pivotal when you now see them after they come out from the mountain, the way they behave, and the way God responds to their behavior is going to be far different than what it is currently, right? So, yeah, we got the commandments. Anything stand out to you guys in the commandments that you want to talk about before we start today's Torah portion? Or unless you guys are good.
What?
It's all about the heart. The commandments are all about the heart and caring for other people.
Oh, absolutely. Commandments is all about the heart, right? If you lust after someone's stuff, where do you do that from? The heart. Am I physically taking John's new hydrovac that he's getting? It's like, man, I want that hydrovac because I like just blowing everything up with water. If I think that in my heart, am I physically taking it from him? Yeah. I'm not physically taking it, but in my heart, right? The commandment says, you shall not covet my neighbor's stuff. Whether it's his cars, his houses, his servants, or his wife, or whatever, or his children, whatever it is, not to covet, not to lust after it in my heart. Go ahead, John, you can say something?
So, coveting is often something that you shouldn't have, right? Mm-hmm. Because, for example, let's say you got a brand new little zero-turn John Deere mower. And I'm like, wow, I need something like that. And I save up money and get myself one just like it. So I wanted one.
Right.
But I wasn't looking for ways to take yours.
Correct.
So, yeah, but yeah, it all starts in the heart. Or if I'm thinking, well, Fernando doesn't deserve such a nice mower. See, isn't that often that's how people justify their covetousness? By saying that he's not good enough to have, you know, I should have it because I deserve it and he doesn't. Isn't that how it often with
covetousness? Absolutely, yeah. So I guess to put all this together, what Viola and Hannah and John saying is Yahweh redeems us, right, from our issues in this world, redeems us to him, gives us the Torah to change our identity, right, to change our heart, to circumcise our heart, so we can serve him now. Because he doesn't redeem us. He doesn't redeem us so we can go do whatever we want to do. If we call out to him, that means we're asking to come into his house. And there's rules in his house. So when he pulls us out of Pharaoh's hand, he says, here's your new way of living. This is who you are going to identify as now, because this is the whole reason I created you in my image and in my likeness. And I am holy, so you be holy. And there's only one way to be holy. Here's the commandments. This is what makes you holy. Right? So, cool. Anything else before we get started? Y'all good? Okay, chapter 21. The name of this is Mishpatim, which means
judgments.
Now, when I say judgments, what do you guys think about?
Ordinances.
You think about ordinance. What does that mean? What does that mean to you?
These days, and ordinances, the commandment.
Say that again.
The commandment.
No, it doesn't. So there's a specific definition that this should really mean. Because, go ahead, what are you going to say?
Is it consequences for something that you've not done?
No. Okay. Judgments, that's what most people in America think, that judgments mean something bad and punishment. That's not what it means. Anybody knows what it means? It means to deliver you.
I like that.
Judgments means to deliver you. Your judgments are better than gold, sweeter than the honeycomb. Psalm 119. Anybody? Is it 119? Or is it 19?
Yeah,
19.
No,
Psalm 19. Psalm 19.
19.
Yeah, it's Psalm 19. Your judgments are better than gold. So his judgments are something to deliver you from a certain situation that should not have happened. Because if you live life long enough, all of us have found ourselves in a situation that was not cool. Anyone ever been there in a situation, in a relationship with someone or something? You know, whether it be business or a neighbor or a cousin or a relative or an ex-friend or whatever it may be. You ever been in a situation where you're just like, this situation's horrible? Anyone ever been there? And that, this is what this Torah portion is about. Is about God delivering us from stuff that we shouldn't be in, or someone shouldn't have done. Someone did something that put us in a predicament that is this very awkward and uncomfortable and just have never should have happened. Now, as we read them, you'll understand what I'm talking about. But notice that when we read this, a lot of this is if. If this, then that. This is not God saying, this is my will for how you guys should live. He's basically doing like what I do at contracts at work. Whenever I get together with John, John's going to be my customer or my vendor, and I do a contract with him, we do a thing called the scope of work. And I write this scope of work, and it's basically my objective to get John out here, and so he can come and run his fiber line so I can get some broadband or some fiber and I can have phones and computers, this and that. What does it look like? You know, well, he's going to come with his equipment and they're going to do this. I'm just going to supply, you know, a forklift in case he needs it and I do some this and this. And but what happens if John strikes a line? Well, if this happens, then this is how we're going to mediate that situation. If he, you know, runs into my building on accident and punctures a hole, this is how we're going to make sure he has insurance when he comes out here, so we know he's liable to do that. So in our scope of work and our contracts, a lot of this legal talk has nothing to do with he intends to do that. It's just if it happens, then we have a course already set path of how what we're going to follow in case that situation happens. And that's, to me, what Yahweh is doing here, is here we are going to live as a community, and if something like this happens, this is how you'll do it. Not saying that if the if happens, that's got Yahweh's will, don't worry about it. It's more like he's already looking ahead and said, if something like that happens, this is how I want you guys to handle it. John?
Yeah, and also in there, this might be relevant. Most of that is not for punishment.
Correct.
To remedy the situation.
Yes.
But there could be some bonuses or punishments in there. Like, for example, what I've seen before is if I go over, I'm supposed to get this done in 30 days.
Oh,
but
yeah.
If I take 40 days, then I'm going to have to pay a penalty.
Yeah, but it's already...
if I get it done in 20 days, I might get a bonus of
some kind. And it's already communicated in there for you.
Yep.
If you take longer than the 30 days you told us, well, then it's going to cost a little bit more, whatever like that, because of the extra time and the extra manpowers or that we have to deal with this. So yeah, it's already stated in there. And it's not punishment, like you said. It's just a path forward in case we get into that situation. Does that make sense? Yeah? Cool. You all want to share what you all are giggling about back there? Or?
Consequences, right?
What?
That's what it really means, like consequences.
No, this is not consequences,
oh.
No.
It's still messed up.
This is just about getting you out of a situation that shouldn't have happened. Yeah, it just means to deliver you. Yeah. Okay. So when I'm going to go and judge my brother, what that means is I'm not coming to condemn him. Is not what that means. I'm coming to help pull him out of a situation he shouldn't be in. Right? I'm coming to deliver him from something I see he shouldn't be meddling in. That's what that means. And that's a good thing. Now, does it feel comfortable for somebody you're doing that to? No. How many of you guys like to be told you're wrong? Anybody like to be told you're wrong? No, you don't, right?
Unless you're wrong.
Well, no, still, it's just...
Yeah,
some people still know.
You didn't have to say it just because I was wrong.
Yeah. You want to know if you're wrong.
If it's something that you have to address, I mean, there's some things you have to address with somebody immediately. There's some things you pray about, and there's some things that you just like, oh, that's not gonna.
I'm wrong all the time.
Sometimes.
Feel free to point it out, John. I'm okay.
So all it means is to deliver you, okay? It's not to bring consequences on you. It's actually to get you out of a sticky situation, okay? So here we go. So these are the mishpatim which you will set before them. If you buy a Hebrew Eved, he will serve 6 years, and in the seventh he will go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he will go out by himself. If he were married, his wife will go out with him. If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children will be her master's, and he will go out by himself. And if the servant will plainly say, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I shall not go out free. Then his master will bring him to the judges, and he will also bring him to the door, or to the doorpost, and his master will bore his ear through with an awl, and he will serve him forever. Any comments?
That would hurt.
That would hurt.
The thing is, they treat them really, really well. They treat them like family.
Absolutely.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
It's not like slavery we thought.
Now, what is this man doing? He's making a commitment. What is he committing to?
Just being a servant to that person. That he wants to be there with them.
Okay.
I'm not the one who's getting all put through his ear.
Yeah, like, so what's going on? What is he giving up?
Freedom. I'm sorry.
Freedom.
Does this apply only to the Eved Ivri, the Hebrew servant?
Well, if you read, what is, well, have you ever read Romans 1:1?
Not a whole lot. Not enough, apparently.
Yes.
What does Romans 1:1 say?
I don't know.
This is where Tartius writes this letter on behalf of Apostle Saul, and he writes it to these Roman people. Go ahead, John.
Is that where he says that he's a bondservant?
I'm a bondservant to Yeshua Messiah, to Messiah Yeshua. Oh, wow. So he's a bondservant. He's saying, this is my master, who I put my all to his door. I'm committed. Basically, he's saying, in this picture here, of this man putting it all through his master's door to say, I love my master, he's giving up the outside life for the life he has here. Redefining what we think life is all about. If he loves his master, and if he has wife and children there, he's saying, this life is sacrificing my life for someone else. That's true life. True life is not my freedom and leaving my wife and my kids back. So right here, if you really meditate on what's going on, the individual that's getting the awl, who's wanting to be a bondservant, right, or an Eved, right, that's the correct thing. Bondservant is like, it's debatable on the terms, because it makes us think of like a servant. But this bondservant is making us think about what we how we define life. Because he sees life wrapped up in devotion to his wife, his children, and his master. And freedom in the world cannot compare to what he has here in his mind. And I think that's what the scripture is showing. And that's what, when Apostle Saul has Tertullus write this letter to the Romans, says, I am a bondservant to Messiah Yeshua. Meaning, all the things that the world has to offer cannot compare to what I've given my life over to in Yeshua the Messiah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to ask, is there any commentary you've heard about why they do the ear thing? I just have some thoughts, but I just was curious.
Go ahead.
Oh,
mine doesn't have anything on here.
But have you not heard anything on it before?
I've heard things on it before, yeah, but I don't.
Okay. Well, this was saying it might be a way that the master would put a tag in their ear, kind of like what you do with cattle, mm-hmm. so that they would know who it belongs to. And then the ear is an organ that's being used for obedience that it's supposed to be hearing. So it's like a reminder of who to listen to.
Shema.
Yeah. But it's not really mutilating somebody. It's just that part of your ears. You're not damaging mm-hmm. the person, I guess. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know if there is a specific reason. Because it does sound painful to have that. And, I mean, we do piercings now.
Thank you. Okay, so verse 7. If a man sells his daughter to be a ma, she will not go out as the men servants do, or as the Yeveds do. If she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, he will let her be redeemed. He will have no power to sell her to a foreign people, seeing he has broke the covenant with her. And if he has betrothed her to his son, he will deal with her according to the statute of daughters. If he takes another wife for himself, he will not diminish her food, her raiment, and her duty of marriage. If he does not do these three for her, then she will go out free without money. So you guys notice that whole paragraph is all if. It's not, he shall do this. He shall do this. It's okay for him to do this. You guys notice the wording? It is if.
What is he send her out for free?
Hmm?
What is he send her out for no money?
Free without money?
Yes.
Yeah, like, so she doesn't have to pay them for leaving. Because they paid for her, right? They made an investment because it says, if a man has to sell his daughter to be a maidservant or a nama in Hebrew. So these people are paying money for her to the dad. So if she leaves, they don't have to get their money back. They don't get their money back if she leaves because they forgot to do the last three ifs. They treated her wrong. They got another wife. They're not supposed to do the first one. They're not supposed to do the second one. They're not supposed to do the third one. So if they have three strikes on her, that they're treating her illy, she can leave and they don't have to get their money. They don't have to, her dad doesn't have to give them their money back because it's their fault for treating her wrong. Does that make sense?
No, but...
To her dad gave... So... Here's the girl, and here's her dad, and they give these people over here the daughter, and they have to give the dad money. If these people over here treat her wrong, she walks away from them, and they don't get their money back because they treated her wrong. Is what it's saying.
She's not a wife. She's just a servant. But yet she's treated like a wife, right?
Well, because of the second one, if
well, there
she...
he bought her
yeah.
because he's going to marry her.
Yeah, he bought her because he's going to marry either her or he's going to marry his son with her. But they treated her wrong, right? They gave the dad money for the girl because the dad's poor and that's the only reason he would do that. And so they took the girl and then they didn't like her. They got another wife instead of her. They didn't give her clothes. They didn't give her food. And they didn't give her the duty of marriage, which is nice, right? They didn't have affection with her. And so if they didn't do those things, she gets to go back to her dad's house. And they don't have to give the money back to them for what they originally paid for her. which is known as like a dowry or something like that, or a bridal price back in their day. Is that making sense?
They didn't give her money.
No, it has nothing to do with her money. Her dad sold her to them. Those people, those men who wanted to marry her, paid the dad, her dad, money. But when they mistreated her and she went back to her dad's house, the dad didn't have to give them back their money. Okay. Because they treated her wrong. Did that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. Yeah, that's what that is saying. Now, this is not a typical situation that should be happening amongst these redeemed people anymore. All this is hypothetical. This is just if, right? Like, just like in John's business, there's a lot of things in John's mind he probably has could go wrong. There's a lot that could go wrong at business, right? Do you ever hope that any of them go wrong? No. And that's kind of what this is like. But do you have a plan in case something goes wrong? But you hope that it never goes wrong, right? Just because there's a plan doesn't mean you want to ever use the plan. And that's the same way what God's doing here. Just because there's a plan to mediate a situation does not mean that Yahweh ever wants that to happen. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Any comments on that before we keep reading? No? Okay. So verse 12. It says, "He who strikes a man so that he dies will surely be put to death. But if a man does not lie in wait, but Elohim let it come into his hand, then I will point you a place where he will flee." So this is John writing the Bible, and he's like hinting at you that about the cities of refuge even before he even announces them, right? So don't go watch a movie with John that he's already seen, because he's going to spoil it, like this guy.
So, commentators.
So this guy right here is already spoiling, right, the cities to come. It's going to come, but there's a little teaser. So, "But if a man comes presumptuously upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, you will take him from my altar to die." So, not even at, you can't even go to his God's altar for salvation or redemption. Like, there's no base. If you ever play tag, there's not a base. There's not a free zone. If you hurt somebody, you still couldn't, there's nothing at the altar that could save you. Right, from this physical life, if you killed somebody on purpose. And you might read about some people who try to go and hold on to the horns of the altar in Yahweh's temple, and that did not save them at all. They were drug out of there, right? So, verse 15. "So he that strikes his father or his mother will surely be put to death. He who steals a man and sells him, or if he's found in his hand, he will surely be put to death." So kidnappers should be put to death. Oh, it's pretty neat now. There's a couple states here, if you guys watch the news at all, there's a couple states here in America now that are pushing to castrate any people that touch young children. Or any people that... Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Where at?
Oh, good. Of course you're going to ask me that question. No, it's not in Texas. If somewhere on the East Coast,
you should do that.
There's like two states right now.
I think Florida is one.
Is it Florida? Yeah. There's like two states right now that if you are a known sex offender, then they are going to castrate you. I mean, this is what they used to do to the eunuchs back in the day, so they wouldn't touch the women in the palace.
The issue with that, though, is like when you say known, it's like, being found guilty of something nowadays and being guilty of something are two different things. They get those. Is it four of them? It's two or four that they just released from prison because they were wrongfully convicted. Like just this, what, last week? You hear about that, John? And they get, I think, what is it, like 60 or 80,000 for each year that they were incarcerated? It's just crazy.
So they're repeat offenders is basically what they're going after. Yeah, because there are people who have done it then they get let out, and then they repeat on someone else's child. And that's what they're doing. Absolutely. So, yeah, so if they've done it, then they wouldn't be able to do it again. So, where was that, verse 17? He that curses his father or his mother will surely be put to death. Isn't that interesting? Read two verses up from that one. This is all death penalty stuff. Somebody kidnapping is the same crime as somebody doing what with their parents. Curses his mother or his father. Or strikes them. So does Yahweh care about our relationships? Right, yeah. So verse 18. So if men strive together and one strikes another with a stone or with his fist and he does not die but falls into a bed, if he gets up again and walks abroad upon his staff, then one who struck him is free, only he will pay the loss of his time and will cause him to be thoroughly healed. So in a fight, do you ever win? If you lived in Yahweh's...
No.
No, right? Because even if you win, you still had to pay. So basically trying to say that it's no good, right? And this, especially, this is all if men strive. Does Yahweh want his people fighting with each other?
No,
right? This is all hypothetical. This is that John's plan at work that he has these backup plans that he wishes and hopes and prays that he never has to use. Right? So, verse 20. If a man strikes his Eved, his servant, or his Ama with a rod, and he dies under his hand, he will surely be punished. But if he continues a day or two, he will not be punished, for he's his money. So why won't he be punished if they heal?
It's his property.
Not necessarily. Well, it is, but it isn't.
Okay, mine's his property. His property.
Oh, it's his property?
Uh-huh.
Well, the reason he won't be punished in my mind is because he's already punished himself.
Right.
And how did he punish himself? Because that's his worker. If he hurts his worker, well, guess what? If John's my worker... And John's just not moving fast enough today. And I go and I smack John. And now John's got a concussion. And he's out for a week. Well, guess what I'm out of?
A lot of work.
I'm like, oops. So guess what? But John heals. And now John's better. And I'm not punished. And the reason you don't punish me is because guess what? I shot myself in the foot. Because now I'm behind a week of work. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So that's how I see that. I see that if John's my servant and I go and I beat him to where he's like bedridden for a week or two, I'm just hurting myself. That's my own worker that I just took out of commission. So I hope that makes sense. That's how I see that at the moment. You guys have any thoughts on any of this so far before I keep reading? Because I'm reading pretty quick. No? You guys are doing good? Okay. Verse 22. So if men strive and hurt a woman with a child, so that... Now here's most of our versions have something... The wording is different here, but I think the common wording is, if men strive and hurt a woman with a child, so that she delivers her baby, and no injury occurs... He will be punished according as the woman's husband puts on him, and he will pay as the judges determine. Is that how your guys' version reads?
I say brawl and collide with the pregnant woman.
Okay.
And her fetus comes out.
So the baby comes out, yes. right? But, and if nothing happens to her or the baby, it's just a premature birth, then according to the husband and the judges, is how much the man will have to pay. Okay, because some versions have it where it sounds like the child departs from her. The fruit departs from her. But it doesn't specify like she gave labor or if it died.
Mine says miscarriage.
Yours says a miscarriage. Which I don't think it says miscarriage in the Hebrew. Because the next sentence is going to talk about a miscarriage. So watch. I'll read 22 again and then I'll read 23. So if men strive and hurt a woman with child so that she delivers the baby, yet no injury occurs to her or the baby, the man will surely be punished according as to what the husband will put upon him, and he will pay as the judges determine. And if any injury or fatality follows, then you will give life for life. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, injury for injury, wound for wound. And if a man strikes the eye of his bondservant or the eye of his female bondservant and destroys it, he'll have to let him go for free for his eye's sake. And if he knocks out his bondservant's tooth or his maidservant's tooth, he will let him go for free for his tooth's sake. So, does that make sense? Verse 22 and 23 are about two men fighting. They shouldn't be, but if they're fighting, and if they run into a woman and she has premature birth, then it's whatever the husband and the judges determine how much money that guy has to pay for the premature birth. But the baby and mama are okay. Second scenario is if two men are fighting and run into a pregnant woman and either she dies or the baby dies, then that man's going to be punished for the death that he caused. Right? And then it says, if you strike the eye of your female servant and you destroy it, they get to pop your eye back out. And if you knock the tooth of your bond servant out, then they get to knock your tooth out. No, are you shaking your head at me? Why are you shaking your head?
No, they're set free.
Oh, they're set free. But he said tooth for tooth. And my pastor used to tell me eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and hand for hand. So if I break your finger, you break my finger. That's what I was taught.
Yeah.
Was that wrong? That's wrong. Yeah, okay. You're correct. That was wrong. Right?
I didn't know they valued teeth so much. I mean, I could see an eye, but a tooth?
Hey.
That's your smile, huh?
I was getting mad at my mom the other day because my brother got these two $20,000 braces and I got nada. I got zero, zip. And she told me, you're okay. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks. He got a whole brand new vehicle up here and I didn't. I didn't even get a car wash.
She took well, look, she married you anyway.
Oh, yeah, but still.
You said you
met
one time and you never wanted to
go
again.
But yeah, who wants pliers shoved up their mouth and yanked?
She might have wanted to take you and you said no.
I was traumatized. First time she ever took me in there, they put the pliers and pull teeth out. And I'm like, what, walking with gauze for a week? Would you want to go back? At least take me for just a cleaning first to get me used to it. Give me some helium. Nope. Sorry. But anyway, Miss Viola, you're correct. Yeah, so the eye for eye thing is if you hit their eye, they get to go for free. They don't have to pay you nothing. You don't have a servant no more, right? If you knock their tooth out, they don't get to stay there and you beat them up. God says they get to go for free now. And if they're poor, they can go find a nicer master than you. Matter of fact, we're going to read about if there's a slave that runs away, a servant that runs away from a master to someone else, you're not supposed to give him back.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So, don't ever think that anywhere in the Torah tells you that if John breaks your finger, you break his finger back. It doesn't say that. Well, all that means is John pays for your hospital bill, right? And he pays for any time of loss that you have from work and the things you can't do or aren't able to do with it. All right. So any questions on any of that? Pretty clear? Verse 28. John wants to make some coffee.
I feel like I need some.
Are you not drinking coffee?
Not in the afternoon, it's just in the morning.
Have some chocolate, it'll wake you up.
So if an ox gores a man or a woman so they die, the ox will be surely be stoned and its flesh will not be eaten, but the owner of the ox will be innocent. But if the ox had injured with its horn in times past and had been testified to his owner and has not kept him in, but he had killed a man or a woman, the ox will be stoned and his owner also will be stoned to death. If a sum of money for atonement is laid on him, he will pay the ransom for his life, whatever is laid upon him. Whether he had gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment, will it be done to him? If the ox gores a manservant or a maidservant, he will give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox will be stoned.
Pretty 12 ounces.
Huh?
That's 12 ounces.
12 ounces? What are you talking about? Oh, 30 shekels? How much is 12 ounces of silver in today's life, John?
That'd be quite a bit.
$30,000?
It's 12 ounces. I think it's...
It's going up these days, silver and gold.
Is it 1,000?
Or
a little less, though. Oh, it sounds like a lot.
Like $15,000, maybe?
I think silver's under 1,000.
Is it under 1,000 right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's say $5,000.
Okay.
Penalty.
Yeah. So, if you got a crazy animal, it's hurt somebody, either keep it locked in or get rid of it.
Yeah, kill it.
Yeah.
Butcher it.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Get rid of it.
Or else, if you know about it and you let him out, yeah, you are a danger to society. Right? If you got a dog that is... got the sharpest teeth ever and is mean to everybody and you don't got a fence or him chained up or locked, guess what you are? You are a danger to society. No matter how much you love that thing.
Yep.
No matter how good that thing is to you.
Not to everybody else.
Yeah. So no matter what animal it is, John, you're smiling. You got a story for us or? No. So, yeah, no matter what, if an animal is dangerous, keep them locked up or get rid of them. Have a barbecue with them or something or kill them, whatever it is. Yeah, if it's like a cow, if it's an ox, yeah. But whatever you do is don't be a danger to society, right? To your community. 33, we'll finish this chapter. If a man opens a pit or if a man digs a pit and does not cover it and an ox or a donkey falls in it, the owner of the pit will make it good and give money to their owner, and the dead beast will be his. Good? Yes. I know I read it at home. I have to practice at home so I can be good for here. Because practice makes perfect.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yes it does. Well, it makes me close to perfect.
Your next one starts some people's next chapter.
Oh, already? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm still on chapter 21. I'll let you guys know when mine goes to chapter 22. So if one man's ox hurts another's and it dies, they will sell the live ox and divide the money. They will also divide the dead ox. Or if it is known that the ox had gored in times past and its owner has not kept him in, he will surely pay ox for ox, and the dead will be his own. So again, the whole theme behind all of these situations is, if you know you got something dangerous, take care of it before you have to find yourself in an ugly situation. Right? So, Like, if you know your wife is a crazy driver, don't let her drive out there on those roads, right? Just kidding. That's not what it says. But it's good philosophy, though. So, all right. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and kills it or sells it, he will restore 5 oxen for an ox, 4 sheep for a sheep. John, what's the math equation on this one? 1/5?
20%.
20%. Oh, man. That's what I said.
Yeah.
It just sounds better when it comes out of his mouth, though. All right, so I'm in my 22. Do you guys have any comments on chapter 21? If I could summarize chapter 21 to
you
me.
Can.
Huh?
He said, if I could, you can. You do it all the time.
I would say, don't be a hazard or a danger to society. Can't walk down my street because Viola doesn't have a fence, and anytime I walk down her street, that dog comes running at me and I'm afraid it's going to bite me. Anybody ever have a neighbor like that?
Back in the day when they didn't do nothing. It's like you had to run.
Or you can be like John's family's nemesis, where the guy was just waiting for a dog to put one paw in his line and see a dog.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, hopefully his shot would be successful, unlike John's.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He said he shot a dog, remember, and it didn't die?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah. It was a raven dog.
Remember that?
Shot him and yeah, it didn't kill. No. You're talking about our own pet. Yeah.
See, there's more than one.
Yeah,
are you trying to?
I remember that.
Yeah, he had hip dysplasia.
Oh, okay.
I was gonna put him out of his misery.
Oh.
And it worked the first time.
Yeah, that was bad.
See.
Oh, it's like Jeff with a chicken and the axe, and it was dull, and he ended up beating her. And I'm thinking, no, it's my bestest chicken ever. I said, don't you think the next time you go to shop, you're like, yeah, I should. Oh.
That's funny. I mean, not to you, it's not real, but just that should be in a movie. All right, so my 22. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you have another story for John? No? Okay. So if a thief is found breaking in and is struck so he dies, there will be no bloodshed for him. If the sun rises upon him, there will be bloodshed for him. He shall make full restitution. If he has nothing, he will be sold for his theft. If the theft is certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or donkey or sheep, he will restore double. You got a comment on that one? After you done chewing? It looks like you wanted a comment.
100%.
Yeah, he's got the math equation down. Hey, my next math test, if I ever have one, I'm going to have you on the speakerphone for me. I'll just read them out loud and you just text me the answer.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So, everybody understand that first paragraph? Someone's in your house.
And if you kill him,
he's dead. In Yahweh's eyes, you're innocent. It's not murder.
And that's why you said the commandments, it doesn't say not to kill, it says not to murder.
Correct. Because there's a difference. If I'm going to take someone's life and who's inside my house, I don't know what they're there for. So I'm protecting myself, right? And in Yahweh's eyes, I'm innocent. I don't know what the judge and the courtroom, and depending on what state or county you live in, you know, they might get you, right? But in Yahweh's eyes, you're innocent. But if someone comes and steals, you know, John's tires off his truck, and John goes and marches down the street and finds him in daylight at the store, and then he kills him, that's a whole nother story. That's in Yahweh's eyes, he's not innocent, because he, the whole way over there, he was plotting how to murder someone. But if they just come into his house and he doesn't know why they're there and he does it, that's a whole nother story compared to like, oh, I know who it is and I'm going over there right now and I'm bringing my brothers. And
contrast that with a case where this robber breaks in into a house, a skylight, and then when he comes down through the skylight, lands on the floor in the glass that he broke, cut himself, and sued the homeowner for it.
And won?
Mm-hmm. No.
That's in the U.S.
That is wrong.
That's got to be sent to appeals. It has to be.
Yeah, I don't know if it was appealed or not.
It's got to be sent to appeal. I wouldn't. That's nonsense.
But a lot of judges...
Probably in California.
I think we're going to...
Yeah, that's true.
Probably get into that here. I don't know if this passage, but crooked judges.
Oh, crooked judges, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So, verse 4. If a man causes a field or vineyard to be eaten and puts his beast in it and feeds in another man's field, of the best of his own field and of the best of his own vineyard, he will make restitution. You got your own vineyard. Why are you putting it in someone else's? I got my whole nice alfalfa field, but I'm going to let my animals out on John's alfalfa field. Why would I do that?
I don't know.
Have you guys ever asked yourself, why did someone so do that? Anybody ever been there before? Yeah, why would you do that? You have the field, but I'm let him have some of John's fields instead.
That used to happen back in the day at the ranches where we were at. So this, the guy that had the real skin cows, would let them into your land and
let
them graze. And they can't pay back to their place because it's like gone anyway. Like, oh man, let's make better fences.
Yeah. Okay, so if fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that stacks of grain or standing grain or the field are consumed, he that kindled the fire will surely make restitution. If a man delivers to his neighbor money or stuff to keep it and it's stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, let him pay double. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house will be brought to the judges to see whether he put his hand to his neighbor's goods. For all manner of trespass, whether it is for ox, for donkey, for sheep, for clothing, for any manner of lost thing, which another challenges to be his. The cause of both parties will come before the judges, and whom the judges will condemn, he will pay double to his neighbor. Okay, so far in this chapter, what have we read about?
What they have to pay back.
Yeah, so you've read about a thief, right? Mm-hmm. A thief. You've heard about a vineyard that's eaten. You've heard about a fire, right? Mm-hmm. In a field or storehouse. And you heard about, what was the last one that we read? If
lost garments or items.
Lost items.
That were in their care, but then they might lose it.
Okay, watch. As we read through this, we'll come back and break this all down. What is he saying to us? So, verse 9, is that where I'm at?
Yeah.
If a man delivers a donkey or an ox or a sheep or any beast to his neighbor to keep and it dies or is hurt or driven away and nobody saw, then will an oath of Yahweh be between them both, that he has not put his hand to his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it will accept it and he will not make it good. And if it is stolen from him, he will make restitution to its owner. If it is torn in pieces, let him bring it for witness, and he will not make good that which was torn. Any thoughts on that? Comments? You guys understand what's going on? Yes? Good? Okay. So what was that one about? If I was babysitting an animal?
The animal escapes with no witness.
Yeah.
This is one scenario. Another one is if it's killed by another animal.
So we call it animal sitting?
Animal sitting.
That'll be our little title there. Okay. So if I let John watch my goats, because I got to go out of town, and I come back and my goats die, but John was at his house, is it John's fault?
Barbecue. There's no evidence left.
Well, if I come back and he's got some chops in his mouth, then yes, it was his fault. But isn't this how life sometimes happens, though? Right? Oh, Viola, can you watch my cat for me? Oh, yeah, sure. Enjoy your vacation. And then cat drops it. That's how life happens typically. Go ahead.
Or you could be like Jeff and his friend.
Oh, goodness.
They're going to have Easter dinner. They say, yeah, let's go get a mom's goat and we'll put it under the ground, cook it up, and we'll serve it for Thanksgiving. Oh, they did. And mom's all happy, and it's her goat. But they didn't ask mom. So they had a great meal.
My brother's goat, and we ate it, and thought it was so good until he found out he didn't want to.
Why would you guys do that to them?
I didn't do it. Because they think, oh, they'll love me because I'm making food. I guess.
How did mom feel when she went outside and her goat was gone?
And then the son had to confess, oh, mom, that's your goat.
Oh, no. That's why we have certain meat goats and certain goats you don't meet. That's funny. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, did you know about that story?
It was before me.
Oh, man. So you go outside and make sure you got all your chickens and stuff there?
And the axes are sharpened.
Oh, man. Okay, where was I at? 13,
14, I
think. 13, thank you. So if a man borrows anything from his neighbor and it is hurt or dies, the owner of it not being with it, he will surely make it good. But if the owner is with it, he will not make it good. It's a hired thing and it came for its hire. Okay? Does that make sense, you guys?
Yeah.
So a hired thing. We'll put it on the board. If a man seduces a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he will surely endow her to be his wife. If her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he will pay money according to the dowry of virgins. You will not allow a witch to live. Whoever lies with the beast will surely be put to death. He who sacrifices to any god except to Yahweh only, he will be utterly destroyed. You will neither taunt nor oppress a stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You will not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way, and they cry at all to me, I will hear their cry. And my wrath will wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives will be widows, and your children fatherless. If you lend money to any of my people with you who are poor, you will not be to him as a usurer, neither will you charge him interest. If you ever take your neighbor's garment for a pledge, you will deliver it to him by the time the sun goes down. For that is his only covering. It is his clothing for his skin. In what will he sleep? And it will be when he cries to me, I will hear, and I am gracious. Okay, so we have the widows. We have what? The fatherless. We have the poor. Did I miss anything? It's all going to make sense when we put this together at the end of this chapter. If you don't already see the theme. If you already have the theme, go ahead and tell us. Okay? So, last little paragraph for this chapter. You will not revile God or curse the leader of your people. You will not delay to offer your first ripe fruits and your wine and oil tithes. Now, has he even mentioned what a tithe is yet? No? Interesting. Has he talked about ripe fruits yet? Your first fruits yet? No?
I don't think so.
So yeah, this is my wife talking to me like, what are you talking about? What's a tithe? And you know what she's going to tell me? Let me finish talking.
Exactly.
So.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Next chapter.
Yeah, really finished talking. So, let's see how many chapters later I have to wait to get the answer to this one question.
Wait, I'm not done.
Exactly.
That's what I tell Jeff.
Oh, you tell, oh, it's the same thing, huh? Oh, it's the same. John, is it the same thing in your house too? Oh, man. What is the Lord doing? Okay. So he says, the firstborn of your sons you will give to me. You will do likewise with your oxen, with your sheep. 7 days it will be with its mother, and on the eighth day you will give it to me. Which, if you had animals, it's very interesting. Like when my goat's kid, if I take that kid away for like a minute to clean it up or something, that mama goat's like freaking out. Like, rah, rah, rah. You're like, whoa, easy. I'm helping you. Hold on. Trying to help you, right? Like whenever we try to feed their babies, they get like all, you know, they're just all at the fence. Like, what are you doing, my baby? Or sadly, when we had one that had a miscarriage, like she was searching for like a whole week for her babies, you know. And it's sad because you can't do anything, and she's out.
Let them know. You have to let them see that the babies have not made it.
Yeah, so it's like, so anyway, I kind of see some of the mentality that could go on. I don't know all animals, but I know specifically for goats that this would apply, that like if mama doesn't know they're not okay, like she's freaking out. Like she's not eating, she's out there crying, calling for them. But then you have some weird goats that are just like,
who cares?
Yeah, you're like,
they just use the bathroom, that was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but anyway, I can definitely see why you let the baby be with mama for 8 days.
Yeah.
Which, anyway, verse 30 on mine, and then the end of the chapter. You will be holy people to me. You will be a holy people to me. Neither will you eat any flesh that is torn of beast in the field. You will cast it to the dogs. The first couple times that he ever says, be holy, has to do with what you're eating. And the next time you're going to read it, you're going to read it in Leviticus, in chapter 11, where he talks about, you can eat this and don't eat that. You shall be holy as I am holy. Here it is, right here. He says, you will be holy people to me. You will not eat any flesh that's torn of beast in the field. You'll cast it to the dogs. So, food instruction is not what animal on this one, it's just if it's
how
it died. How it died is important to him and what you eat.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. That's that chapter for me, at least. I don't know where I'm at in your chapter, in your books.
Yep.
Okay? So, how would you summarize chapter 22? If you were trying to summarize it, how would you summarize it? Give some cliff notes here. Anybody want to take a shot at it? Any word wizards want to try it?
Is mercy concern or something like that?
It's you and me not trying to gain anything out of any of these situations, but trying to what? To walk in what the truth of what happened, right? So the thief that broke into my house, I killed him because I didn't know what he was doing there for. I didn't know he was trying to steal. I had no idea why he was there. But what I don't do is if he's trying to steal my tires in my shop and he goes and steals my tires and I find him the next day somewhere else and I murder him, was that equal justice? Was he trying to harm me? So was my $1,000 tires, I don't know how much your tires are, but was my $1,000 tires worth his life? Me taking his life? No. If he was going in to do that at my house, but I don't know what he's doing at my house, God says I'm innocent because I don't know what's going on, especially most of the time it happens in the middle of the night. But if the next day I see him out trying to sell my tires and I take his life, my actions are not equal to what he did, right? I went way overboard on that one. What about eating someone else's field with my animals, feeding my animals? What about burning up their storehouse with their food or something, right? What about the lost items and the animal sitting and something crazy happens? Or if I sold their animal? Or what is this telling you guys? What should I and you, what should we be thinking about in all of our dealings and all of our relationships?
To be like Yahweh, have integrity.
Have integrity, that's a good one. Yeah, integrity, right? And what else? To treat other people the way you want to be treated? Right? Have you guys ever heard that before? Who said that? Who said those words? Where do you think he got that from?
Right here.
Yeah. If John had a whole freezer full of steak, and he asked me to watch, and he asked me to watch his house for him, while he went on his, you know, off-roading expeditions, and he comes back to an empty freezer, all his steaks are gone. What do you think John's gonna expect me to do?
Replace it fivefold.
The way you want to be treated. Now we have a brother that I noticed had always takes care of lots of people on the street. His wife gets mad at him because he's always picking up people on the street or whatever. And I asked him, why do you do that? And he says, because I just think that's my son on the street. And I just pray and hope someone would pick him up if he's ever on the street. You know, so anyway, nice little thought behind there. So, yeah, chapter 22, good job, Sonia. Integrity. That's deep. Not everyone has that. Have you guys ever been in a situation where someone argued that, let's say they loaned you something and you gave it back and you... And they're like, oh, it wasn't that bad when you gave it to me. Or have you been on that end where you gave someone something brand new and they gave it back and it was almost destroyed or they wanted to do nothing with it? Any stories you want to share?
Just an old one I probably shared before. This guy wants to borrow a scanner from me.
You got a scanner?
Yep. He picked it up. And I was out of town. I had bought it. It was brand new in a box.
When you say a scanner, like a scanner to like the...
A scanner to scan documents.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
A flatbed scanner.
Okay.
It was in a box, big box. But, yeah, then... I was in Perryton or somewhere. I was like 200 or 300 miles from home.
And I didn't need it right away, but when I needed it, I can't find it. So I bought another one. And probably 15 years later, I run into this guy. I completely forgot. I didn't even know who had it. And it was at a restaurant in Denver City. He was there with his whole crew. Anyways, and he greeted me and he says, "Oh, by the way, I still have your scanner. What do you want me to do with it? Because it's a piece of junk. It doesn't work." I told him just...
15 years later.
15 years later, I told him just throw it away. And it was like a $500 scanner. Never worked. Well, it was brand new. But anyways, back then, scanners weren't plug and play. You had to install software and configure it. But, yeah. So he would have owed me what? Let's see what he owes me. No, I forgave him.
Yeah, Sarah.
We had an instance where we had Torah brother asked if we could borrow or pick up. And we're like, "Well, we kind of need both vehicles." And he goes, "Oh, we can have our vehicle while we're using your vehicle." I'm like, "Okay." And so when we had their vehicles, like, "Okay, I don't want to damage their vehicle. I want to clean it." We washed it, made sure it's full of fuel. And then we got our pickup back, and the guy's like, "Yeah, we worked it pretty hard. It's probably still working. I didn't have enough time to put fuel in it, so we're kind of running on fumes. And yeah, but thanks for letting us borrow. It might have to use it again." And I gave Fernando a look. I was like, "Yeah, that's a no." And we got it, and sure enough, it was like, the inside was completely dirty. It barely started because there was so low on fuel. And I just said, "No."
Sarah and Hannah had just washed it for me. It was a long bed Dodge that I had at the time, and they had just washed the outside and the inside for me, so it was nice and clean. And when they asked if they can borrow it, I was like, "Sure." They brought it back. It was dirty on the outside, foot marks on the all on top of the dashboard, like mud everywhere in there, and I was like,
"Oh." And it didn't sound right anymore. It didn't really want to come for it.
Yeah, apparently he loaded up the truck bed and pulled the trailer with it more than its max load, and like, "All right."
I'm like, "Oh, you shouldn't have put fuel in there for us." I said, "Well, I just thought that was like
the courteous thing to do.
Maybe I have to drive it back home." But yeah, so that kind of sad when you think you're on the same thought process as someone before, and then that happens, and you're just like, "Yeah, please don't ask us to borrow these."
Or you could be like Jeff. He had a friend that he had a bike, and the guy said, "Hey, can I borrow that bike?" He said, "Yeah, go ahead."
Like a motorcycle?
A motorcycle bike, okay. Yeah. "Go ahead, use it all you want." And so he gets a call in the middle of the night one night, and he says, "You need to pick your bike up. It's a bunch of junk. It don't go nowhere." And he had to beat it, and it was like dead. But he was mad at him because he gave him a junk truck, a little bike. Like, "What in the world? I gave it to you. Yeah, and it's junk." You had it for I don't know how many weeks.
People are funny. All right. You got another? Go ahead.
Use your friends wisely. That's not wise.
Yeah, no.
It's not like you bought it off of him or anything, right?
No, you just let him use it. Go ahead and use it all you want.
All right.
Come pick it up.
All right, so here we go, chapter 23. "So you will not listen to a false report. Don't put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You will not follow a multitude to do evil. Neither will you agree with the majority to pervert justice. Neither will you consider a man's poverty in his cause." How would you guys define that little?
Democrats.
Right? You need to stand for the truth, no matter where it's at.
Majority.
Stand for truth, right? It may be your best friend that is the one lying here. And Yahweh said, stand for truth, no matter who it is. Right? So if you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you will surely bring it back to him again. If you see the donkey of the one who hates you lying under his burden, and you will not want to help him, you will surely help with him.
Wait a minute, I thought this wasn't, you hate your enemies and...
Don't help them at all.
Isn't that what Christians say? You could hate your enemies in the Old Testament.
Oh yeah.
But here it says, even if it's your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the enemy is probably from the other side, right? Because these are the good people.
Well, actually, this right here is actually those who are living within Israel. There's going to be people within the household of faith that just don't like each other. And even if you don't like them, you still treat them well. Because whose image are they in? Right? Because there are going to be some personalities out there that you just don't mesh with. Your personality and their personalities, they just don't combine. It just doesn't work. And Yahweh's like, I don't care. If you see their donkey, you see their ox, you still take care of it. John?
Yeah, like, there's two cases here. One, the donkey or ox is wandering. You got to return it to him. Or if it's stuck under a load, you got to free it and bring it back.
It says help him. Help with him, right? Yeah. I mean, it's already hard just to stop because you're busy scheduled to go help somebody. And now he's telling you just go help your enemy, too, on top of that, which is a better excuse for you not to pull over.
But yeah, the point, though, like people will often say that in the New Testament, that's where you're supposed to do these things. But in the Old Testament, you could hate your enemies and you could mistreat your enemy and you didn't. But it's really more of the same. But one thing, the way I see it, is there really isn't a new covenant.
No.
It's the same covenant, but because it was broken, we have to re-engage the same covenant.
Well, I think it's not necessarily like, it's not a new covenant, it's just a new placement of it.
Yeah, I was reading Ezekiel 37 last week.
Oh, yeah.
And the end of it, it says there are five times that the nations are all going to keep the Torah forever. Mm-hmm. King David will be the prince forever. But people, no, that's not forever. And then, of course, the one from our previous studies where it says to the thousandth generation.
Right.
Yeah, that way extends, goes probably to the end of the world, the end of the ages, the thousandth generation. So it didn't go away.
Amen. All right. So, verse 6, you will not pervert the judgment of your poor in his cause. Keep far from a false matter and the innocent, and do not kill a righteous person. For I will not justify the wicked, and you will not take a gift, for the gift blinds the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. Okay? So, no innocent people should be able to die under this... no innocent people put to death in this court system. That's the goal here. That's the goal. Is Yahweh doesn't want any innocent people to ever have to suffer any consequences because of perverse judges, wicked and corrupt judges. Okay? Verse 9. So you will not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger, seeing that you were strangers where?
In the land of Mitzrayim.
Strangers. Okay. You will sow your land 6 years and will gather in its fruit, but the seventh year you will let the land rest and lie still, so the poor of your people can eat, and what they leave, the beasts of the field will eat. In like manner, you will deal with your vineyard and with your olive grove. Okay, so then you have your gleaning, right? For the poor and for animals. Interesting.
Yeah, that seventh year is called the Shemitah.
The Shemitah year, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever read the book of Joshua and Judges?
Yeah, I sure have.
Do you guys ever, have you ever read in there for them keeping a year of Sabbath, a Shemitah year?
Mm-hmm.
You've read about them keeping it there?
No, that they actually keep it, no.
Do they actually keep it in there? Do you ever read, oh, this is the seventh year?
See, well, a lot of this stuff, you never hear about it actually happening. Do you ever hear about anybody poking out somebody's eye?
Well, no, that doesn't happen, because that's not what that means.
Like, or for example, if your 30-year-old son is a rebel and a drunkard and disrespects his parents, they're supposed to stone him to death. Does it ever mention that a son is stoned to death like that?
Well, we read of the opposite. We read of them doing the murdering and stuff. And that, you know. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, just something to note when you read that, like, hey, how come I don't read about them doing this? Is the author just not saying it, or are they really not doing it?
Well, you read that one of the kings, wasn't it a young king, one of his servants finds the Torah, and they didn't even have the Torah, and then they found out they weren't doing a lot of it, and then they had some of those celebrations.
I believe that was Hezekiah and Josiah. I think both of those guys had revelations of similar stories of like that. Yeah. All right, so let's keep reading. Verse 12, 6 days you will do your work, and on the seventh day you will rest, so your ox and your donkey can rest, and the son of your handmaid and the stranger may be refreshed. Okay, so then you have the Shabbat.
So the animals get to enjoy the Shabbat too?
Yeah.
So nice. If we did that, would it be like not breeding our animals if they're taking a seventh year rest? Would that mean not breeding them?
No.
Oh.
No. It means working them. Like they're actually working every day in the field.
Like pulling
like they're the tractors. No. No.
Okay.
They're pulling a wagon or a plow, right?
Yes.
That's why they didn't have their horses take them to church before they had cars.
Yeah.
No, Sister Men said it's not working.
So,
where's your plow?
Where am I at? Verse 13. And in all things that I have said to you, be circumspect, and you will not make mention of the name of other gods, or let them be heard out of your mouth. For 3 times in the year you will keep a feast to me. You will keep the feast of unleavened bread. You will eat unleavened bread for 7 days, as I commanded you, in the time appointed of the month of Aviv. For in Aviv you came out from Egypt, and no one will appear before me empty. And the feast of harvest, Shavuot, the first fruits of your labors, which you have sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering, Sukkot, at the end of the year, when you have gathered in your labors out of the field, 3 times in the year all your males will appear before Yahweh. Okay? So, he hits us with the feast day, right? Mm-hmm. So you get the feast days. Any comments? You guys are good? Okay. Verse 18, you will not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, neither will the fat of my sacrifice remain until the morning. The first of the first fruits of your land you will bring into the house of Yahweh, your Elohim. You will not boil a kid in its mother's milk. Okay, so he gives you cooking instructions. Okay. So he tells you what not to eat right, of how something died. And now he gives you cooking instructions. And people tell me that God doesn't care about what we eat.
He's always bringing it up in the Bible.
Well, he's got the manna, and he has portion control, right? So, God already has portion control when he came to the manna. He's telling us what not to eat, of something, how it dies. And now he's giving us some cooking instructions, right? Don't boil a kid in its mother's milk. Okay? So, don't get the... Because remember, back in their day, most people made meat, they boiled meat. Like broths and stocks and soup. That's how they made their meat. Because it soaks most of the nutrients into the... What did you say?
He thought you said socks.
They boiled their socks. No, stocks. Like, yeah. Sorry, bud. But yeah, so most of them boiled their meat because that's how you get most of the nutrients, is out of like the bones and all that stuff, which is most of you guys have bone broth, and right? That's why back in the day when people were sick, guess what they drank a lot? They sipped on some bone broth, right? Chicken bone broth, beef bone broth.
And that's the whole idea behind the...
And that's the whole idea of boiling your meat, is to get all the nutrients out of it, not just the protein out of the meat, but to get all the vitamins and minerals out of the bone.
And said that back in the day, marshmallow was like a plant, and it was...
There's still a marshmallow root today, the marshmallow plant.
But so there wasn't like marshmallows how we know them. It was medicinal, and it was for, like, more like kings and stuff had access to it. And then we go and turn it into sugar and water and pork.
So, yes, if you're talking about the little fluffy thing, yes. But there's still today, there's still marshmallow root that people still use. Absolutely. So, yeah, so now he has some cooking instructions, verse 20. Behold, I am sending my messenger before you to keep you in the way, to bring you into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Don't provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if you will indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I shall be an enemy to your enemies, an adversary to your adversaries. For my messenger will go before you and bring you into the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Canaanite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, and I will cut them off. You will not bow down to their gods, serve them, or do after their works, but you will utterly overthrow them and absolutely destroy their images. Who is the messenger that's going to go before them?
An angel.
Who is he?
Yeshua.
There you go. But what's the condition that he goes before them? There's a condition.
No disobeying them.
Yeah.
And don't worship the gods, bow down before their gods.
Oh. All these,
you know, I mentioned to some of my friends that how everything is Hellenized, and, you know, or Roman. And all. No, it's not. But through and through, the calendar, the days of the month, the days of the week, our court buildings, guess what they're modeled after?
The Roman government.
Roman. The architecture is Roman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at our courthouses with the columns in the front, and then look at all the detail, and like, very often you'll see a lot of their gods in there, faces of their gods, all over the front of the building. You know, you can, if you drill down on it and find out what each one of those little faces are, there's some kind of a Roman or Greek god behind it. They're saying, nope, there's no.
So Israel, they messed up right away. I mean, just get into the book of Joshua, And what? And if you read through Joshua, what do they not do? What do some of the tribes not do in their territories?
They don't take all the Canaanites.
Yeah, they don't take all the Canaanites out. Right? The very first instance is you get one of the Canaanites trick Joshua into making him think that they're from far, far away. And, oh, have those spare our lives. We're just a bunch of nomads. It's like, here's some moldy. Yeah, we're so poor. Here's our moldy bread. This is how far away we live from you. Can you cut a covenant with us that you'll never kill us? Sure. And then you find out they just live next door.
They should have inquired of the Lord.
Yeah. Right? And so you had, as Hannah said, so they didn't get rid of all of them. And then so when you get to the book of Judges, what do you start seeing? What are they doing with the people that they didn't get rid of?
Following their stuff.
Worshipping their gods, right? Anybody ever read the book of Judges before? What's the pattern? What's the cycle in Judges? Anybody know the cycle? It's like a modern believer's cycle. It's
have King Havender bring up judges to lead them in battle, or just save them out of their trouble.
Yeah, well, what's their troubles? How did they get into the troubles?
Idolatry.
Yeah, it's they're not listening. They keep going after these images, right? Even when Gideon comes in, and Gideon delivers him from Midian, what does Gideon himself do?
Myth of Oracle.
He sets up an image, hangs it outside his door, and everyone comes and worships before it. Right? Like, what are you doing, Gideon?
I didn't show that in VeggieTales.
Okay, that's what my children told me. They're like, Dad, after we read it, they're like, Dad, that's not in VeggieTales.
Exactly.
Larry says that's the end of the story. It stops right there. No, but that's the cycle, is they worship these idols and these images and these other gods, and then God puts one of the Canaanites over them, and they feel all oppressed for like 30 years, and then they cry out, and then Yahweh brings a deliverer. A judge. A deliverer. Right? Judge means to deliver you. So he delivers them, and then the moment they're delivered, what are they going to do?
Rinse and repeat.
Yes! As soon as the judge dies, then they go and do it again. Exactly. That's how my kids, when we're reading it, that's what they do. Oh, boy.
I read that one. The rinse and repeat.
You're funny, John. All right, so verse 25.
Read it and they say, oh boy.
Yeah, because they're getting frustrated reading about Israel. Like, because that's what's getting them in the mess. And as soon as Yahweh relieves them of the mess, they get back into it. And so it can be frustrating as a reader to be like, come on. Like, when are you just going to listen? Yes, John.
Yeah, we would never do that.
Hopefully.
Very faithful.
Right.
So, verse 25. So you will serve Yahweh, your Elohim, and he will bless your bread and your water, and I will take sickness away from your midst. No one in your land will miscarry or be barren. I will fulfill the number of your days. I will send the fear of me before you, will destroy all the people to whom you will come, and I will make your enemies turn their backs to you. And I will send hornets before you, which will drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, the Hittite from before you. I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field multiply against you. Little by little, I will drive them out from before you until you increase and inherit the land, and I shall set your borders from the Sea of Reeds even to the Sea of the Philistines, from the desert to the river. I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and you will drive them out from before you. Yes, Hannah.
So it sounds like when he said he was in the plagues.
Yeah.
Before, it sounds like if they listen to him, he was going to do it for them, that they wouldn't really have to do much.
Correct. If he listened, it was he was already driving them out for them. Yes.
But since they didn't listen, they had to do it themselves.
How it goes most of the time, yeah. Like, why is this so hard? Well, because you're doing it by yourself. Well, how do I get him to do it with me? Well, you got to listen to him yet. That's, yeah. John, were you going to say something?
Yeah, doing it themselves, that came with a lot of hardship and toil.
Yeah.
Where it would have been easy if they would have listened.
Yes, if you read 25, verse 25 through 26, right? He says, if you listen to me, you will get the Eden blessings. Right? Mm-hmm. Be fruitful and multiply.
And they're going to live a long life. Their years will be full.
But in order to get the Eden blessings, you have to listen. Because the whole reason they were kicked out of Eden, the garden, was because what didn't they do? Listen.
So when they're listening, then the enemies will go into a panic. They're going to destroy themselves.
Correct. So your greatest weapon against the enemy is to listen to your father. So his job is to get you not to listen to your father and for you to question your father. He wants you to question your father. Did God really say you can't eat this? Did he really say not to do that? Oh, he didn't really say that. He's a good father. He won't hurt you at all. He's not going to harm you. Do whatever you want to do. He's gracious.
No, not at all both times.
Ah, but he does. But the enemy, the liar, doesn't tell you that. Right? Because anybody here have a father or mother in your life? Did they love you? But could you make them mad if you didn't listen? It's still possible, right? Did you ever have a friend that tell you, oh, but, ah, your mom and dad, they'll get over it. Don't worry. Just go ahead and do it. And Viola say no.
Yeah, there's bad people like that try to convince you. No, let's go.
It was my brother.
I thought it was a friend.
Oh, I have to edit that out.
But yeah, you have to watch out for those people, right? Because, don't worry about it. No, you should be worried about it. The reason that you're pushing back is because you know this is not good. So, follow your instinct and say, no, I'm not following through. Because yes, Mom, Dad love me. Yes, my Heavenly Father loves me. But don't test them. Don't test them. Right? You don't want that.
Don't test them.
Yeah, don't test them. Don't you shall not test them.
Don't tempt them.
Test them. You don't test God, right? Yeah. I was gonna go somewhere with that. Oh wow, I'll think about it here in a second. Yeah, but so he's talking about Eden blessings, about listening. If you listen, that's the key. Your greatest weapon is to listen to him. Verse 32, you will make no covenant with them or with their gods. And that was the first thing that Joshua does when he gets there. He didn't ask of God, he didn't inquire, he didn't try to do any investigation. Just cut a covenant with them. Right? The one thing Joshua did wrong. Oh, Joshua, you were almost perfect, man. Almost. And then he did that. Right? So, they will not live in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will be a trap to you. Home stretch, chapter 24. So, what would you guys... So, how would you summarize chapter 23? Anybody? Want to take a shot at 23?
Like obedience
to the whole chapter?
last half of the chapter.
Sorry, the last half.
I forgot to leave these earlier.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Anybody else? How would you summarize that chapter? Sarah, you want to elaborate?
Why is the constant block? Because if you're following what he's asking you to do, there's not going to be miscarriages in the land. There's not going to be animals. And then
So look how it started off. It started off with judges saying, don't let the crowd affect your decision. Don't let money affect your decision. Don't let somebody being poor and someone being rich affect your decision in a judgment. So that's how it starts off. And then it ends by saying, don't cut a covenant with those evil people, with those Canaanites, with all the ites. So I'll put the ites. Don't listen to the ites, and don't listen to the liars. Right? But if you listen to him, you get Eden blessings.
So obey Yahweh and it'll go well with you?
Yeah, so listen to him and not to them, no matter who they are. I guess that's how I would say that. Cool. All right, so chapter 24, home stretch. You guys are troopers. He said to Moses, come up to Yahweh, you, Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone will come near Yahweh, but they will not come near, neither will the people go up with him. So now where are we going?
It's weird the way it's phrased.
What's weird?
Like, Yahweh says, come up to Yahweh.
And he said to Moses, come up to Yahweh. But it doesn't tell you who he is.
Mine does. Mine says, to Moshe, Adonai said, come up to Adonai. Why is Adonai saying, come up to, like... I wouldn't say, come up to Sonia.
No, that's because your Bible does not say, he doesn't give a name.
No.
What I'm saying is, yours doesn't use the name of Yahweh. Yours is a Jewish Bible that is either going to say Hashem or Adonai.
But it doesn't matter.
It does, because it's going to, even when there's only a Lord or a He, it's going to just call everything Adonai. It's not going to want to reference, like, Yeshua at all in there. It's not going to want to distinguish that for you. So, like, when you read Psalms, when it says, Yahweh said to my Lord, which is Yeshua, which is Adonai, it's just going to say, Adonai said Adonai. It's not going to say, Yahweh said to Yeshua.
But I'm saying, why is it even in that format?
That's just your translation. It's not...
Read yours?
So, he said to Moshe, come up to Yahweh.
That's what I'm saying. Same thing.
No, because over here he's saying, I'm sending my messenger, putting my messenger before you. So, he's putting someone before them that's not him.
So, it's not him directly saying.
Depending on the semantics, if you want to play them, yes.
Okay. That was my issue with it, because it sounded like Fernando said, come up to Fernando.
That's not what he's saying, no.
That's what I was saying. And that's what I was saying, like, because my he's capitalized, like, it's like, Yahweh himself saying, come up to Yahweh.
But it doesn't say Yahweh's coming up to Yahweh, because he's...
No, that's not what we're saying. Because it's just saying a he. What I was trying to say is, like, the he is not usually capitalized if Yahweh's talking.
So I know what you're saying, but what I'm telling you is there's more than just Yahweh in the mix. Because in chapter 1 of Genesis...
You married him.
No, I know what you're saying, but there's more to God than just one. Right? So we can't put him in a box as if he's talking Yahweh to Yahweh, like, You could be talking about his messenger.
That's what, because I think what she was trying to say is like, why doesn't it say, and to Moses, the messenger had said, go up to Yahweh. That's what was throwing, this sounds weird because it says he.
Well, that's just our English. You'd read it in the Hebrew. What does the Hebrew say? Is what I'm trying to say. So our English translations are going to say things different than what the actual Hebrew does, because some of your translators are going to stay away from trying to infer Yeshua into anything, because it's just a Jewish one, and they're not going to want to identify your Messiah. If that makes sense. Okay, so verse 3, so Moses came and told the people all the words of Yahweh and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words that Yahweh has spoken, we will do. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I've heard that one before.
The people responded with Na'aseh v'nishma.
All the words that Yahweh has spoken, we will do. Okay? Moses wrote all the words of Yahweh, rose up early in the morning, and built an altar at the foot of the mountain, and 12 pillars, according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered ascension gifts and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to Yahweh. So Moses took half of the blood and put it in its basins, half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. He took the scroll of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that Yahweh has said, we will do, and we will listen. And Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people. And he said, behold, the blood of the covenant, which Yahweh has cut with you concerning all these words. Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 of the elders of Israel went up, and they saw the God of Israel. And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of brilliant sapphire, and as it were, the body of the Rakia in the clearness. And he did not lay his hand upon the nobles of the children of Israel, and they also saw Elohim. Then they ate and drank. Mm-hmm. Any comments? Any observations?
They saw Elohim.
Yeah, they didn't say they saw Yahweh. It says they saw Elohim.
Plural.
Mm-hmm. But where did Moses rise up early in the morning? Where did he build an altar?
Yeah.
At the foot of the hill.
And what else did he build there? Anything? Anybody? What did Moses build at the foot of the mountain?
12 altars.
Yeah.
No, an altar and 12
monuments.
Monuments?
Right, 12 pillars.
Pillars?
Yeah, mine says he set up a mizbeach at the foot of the mountain with 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel.
So if
12 stones?
Check this out. So before you could even get into Yahweh's presence on the mountain, you have 12 foundations, 12 gates before you could even get up there. Come on. Where else in your Bible, before you get into God's presence, do you got to go through 12 pillars? It's the New Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Moses is making the New Jerusalem here. He's like, oh, I see the New Jerusalem. This is what it's like. Right. He's making a replica right here at the mountain. He's telling you the mountain is the present home of God. It's like this interdimensional place where God is, but God isn't. But for them at the moment, he was there. And that's what he saw, right? So he's building this thing right there. Pretty neat, fascinating. And what else does he do there?
He does
an ascension gift. And yeah. Not a sin offering. He does an ascension gift. Like, I want to go up. Moses does an offering saying, I want to come up. So when Moses does the offering, what does Yahweh tell him to do? He says, yeah, bring Nadab and Abihu and all of them up. So they go and they have, in the middle of the mountain, right? Right in the middle of the mountain.
Yeah, there's like a plain there.
What do they do in the middle of the mountain?
Feed and drink.
Yeah, they feast, right? They're feasting in God's presence. And while they're feasting, what do they see?
The sapphire and all the brilliant, beautiful colors like heaven.
It says they see Yahweh through this clearness, through this rakia. Right, John? Is that what the Hebrew says there? The rakia.
Is that verse 10?
That.
I saw God, the God of Israel, under his feet were... There was the likeness of a pavement of sapphire like the very sky for purity.
Yes.
Let's see if I can find rakia in the verse.
So there's a rakia because it says that there's a crystal pavement.
Like the essence of heaven.
There's a crystal pavement. Like there's a pavement, there's a foundation that God is standing on, but it's clear.
Mine says it's like something like made of bricks of sapphire.
Yeah, as it were the body of heaven in its clearness.
The last two words in the verse are Hashemayim le'tahor.
Tahor of the verse? Now this one's a little bit...
Like pure.
Alright. Well, let's just keep reading. Okay, ready? Verse 12. So they're on the mountain eating. And Yahweh said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there. I thought he was already there. They're eating, right? So apparently he's not all the way at the top. This is why I said he's at the middle. So Yahweh said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you the tablets of stone, the Torah, the commandments, which I have written so you can teach them. And Moses and his minister Joshua rose up, and Moses went up on the mountain of God. And he said to the elders, wait here for us until we come back to you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. You guys remember Aaron and Hur? Mm-hmm. Why are you laughing? Okay, so Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has any matters to do, let him come to them. And Moses went up on the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. And the glory of Yahweh stayed on the Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses out of the midst of the cloud. And the sight of the glory of Yahweh was like a devouring fire on top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. And Moses went into the midst of the cloud, went up on the mountain, And Moses was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. You guys see the picture? Can you see the picture? You guys know what picture I'm talking about?
Well, if you draw it, no.
Are you talking about my artist work? So somebody read Exodus 13, 6 for me. I think it's Exodus 13, 6.
Okay.
Read it.
7 days he shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a festival of the Lord.
What day is that talking about?
Unleavened bread.
And what do you do on unleavened bread?
Eat tortillas. Eat matzah.
Keep unleavened.
So, as we read through Exodus so far, the first half of Exodus, the first theme of it, stops at Exodus 13:6, which happens to talk about the seventh day of unleavened bread. And then a whole new theme picked up, right, that we've been reading. And we're right here in 24. And it ends right here in 24, in verse 4. What does it say in 24:4? Where are we at? We're at the foot of a mountain, right? And then where do we go from the foot of the mountain? We're feasting next, right? So then they're feasting. And then where does this chapter end? Where's now Moses at the end of the chapter?
Top of the mountain with a cloud.
Oh, okay. So now Moses, right here, Moses on top of mountain, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, come on. Anybody? Do you guys see what he's saying this mountain is?
Heaven?
Yes. But more specific?
Mount Sinai.
So the foot of the mountain, what if the foot of the mountain is Eden? And what if the middle of the mountain is the garden? And what if the very top of the mountain is where the tree of life is?
Okay.
Because this is what your whole Bible is about us getting back into the tree of life. About, right, the tree of life. And we're finding out that the tree of life is a person. And he's on the top of a mountain. Because that tree's always been on the top of a mountain. Because from that tree flowed what?
River.
So Moses and Yahweh wants us to come back up the mountain where the tree of life is. Right? Through Eden, through the garden, to the tree of life. That's the purpose. Right? So, you can see the pictures there. But then you also have the movements. And they're all about these 7 days. It's the book of Exodus is all about seventh day. A new theme's always going to start on the seventh day when you read through the book of Exodus. Kind of a deal. But the big thing picture to do is this chapter ends. What's Moses doing? Where is he at and for how long?
He went up and stayed up there.
For how long?
Arbaum, Yom.
40 days and 40 nights.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is he supposed to do after 40 days and 40 nights?
He's going to come back with instructions.
He's going to come back down with the Torah, right?
Yep. And
bam.
Things will not go well.
Hmm?
and probably things are not going to go well.
Things are not going to go well?
When he comes down.
When he comes down?
She's taking a chapter out of my book.
He's right next to me, I don't know what to say.
Okay. So this is a picture, a little inverted picture, of what's supposed to happen in the future. Anybody?
Yes. Yeshua.
What about him?
On the mountain.
40 days
and 40 nights. And the desert.
So Yeshua goes 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, correct? So that's, we can kind of tie that in.
To bring the Sermon on the Mount.
No.
Because weren't those instructions?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, so you want to tie Yeshua to the 40 days in the desert, right? In the wilderness. Right, in the wilderness, and then the Sermon on the Mount. Absolutely. Okay. And then another 40 days happens with Yeshua. Did you know another 40 days happens with Yeshua? So after Yeshua dies, they bury him, he resurrects. What does he do for 40 days?
Oh, just appear to people.
So then Yeshua comes, right, for 40 days.
Before he goes up.
Before he ascends, right? 40 days before ascension. So Moses is doing 40 days before descending. Yeshua is doing 40 days before ascending. Moses did 40 days to bring the Torah. Yeshua did 40 days to bring the Spirit.
The Helper.
Right? So 40 days before. So this is Yeshua, right? So this right here is Yeshua. And this right here is Yeshua. Right, 40 days before ascension to bring down power. Now, not just Holy Spirit, but power. They already had Holy Spirit, but he's going to bring down power from on high. Right? Because you and I can have Torah inside of us and Holy Spirit inside of us and just want to stay home with our warm and fuzzies with him. But not everybody wants to go out there and disrupt the community with this truth that you have. Because that's not always pleasant. Right? That takes a supernatural power for John to go out there and mess with his reputation for the truth that he believes in.
Led by the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, so you guys kind of see this pattern, 40 days for Moses to go up so he can come down with the Torah, 40 days for Yeshua so he can go up to come down with the power. Is that cool or not? I like it. I don't know about you, but that made me happy. So I hope it does for you too. But yeah, that's our Torah portion. You guys have any comments or questions? Are you laughing at me? Laughing at me. Y'all good? Did I put y'all to sleep? Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all ready to pray? Father, we thank you for this time together, Lord. Thank you so much. We just pray, Lord, that you would continue to be our joy, to be our strength, to be our everything, Father. We just pray for you to just continue to instill in us a passion for you, zeal for you and your house, that we would forever be lovesick for you, Father, that we would just be lovesick for you until you return. So we just pray for your return and for us, our hearts, to always burn, Father, for you until the moment you do. In Yeshua's name we pray.